Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
Ryan Seacrest here. When you have a busy schedule, it's important to maximize your downtime. One of the best ways to do that is by going to ChumbaCasino.com. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino games like spin slots, bingo, and solitaire that you can play for free for a chance to redeem some serious prizes. So hop on to ChumbaCasino.com now and live the Chumba life. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Brian Koberger, the allegations against him make up one of the, I would say, creepiest cases that I think we have ever covered on here. Of course, the University of Idaho students. And the man accused is a Koberger, criminology PhD student, accused of methodically stalking, murdering, and then allegedly trying to erase every trace of his involvement. It's a story with more behavioral breadcrumbs than a forensic psychology textbook. Joining us, psychotherapist and author Siobhan Scott. Siobhan, prosecution painting Koberger as someone who studied how to commit the perfect crime. Well, the defense hints at neurological defects and autism, possibly. How do we begin to separate possible mental health conditions from dangerous criminal intent in a case like this?
Yeah, autism, if that's what they're going to go for with that, which it certainly sounds like that's going to be raised as an issue, has absolutely nothing to do with criminal behavior. There are millions and millions of people in the U.S. and in every other country of the world that carry a diagnosis at this point of autistic spectrum disorder. That does not mean that they have dangerous fantasies. It does not mean they plot violence. And in no way does it mean that they don't have a moral compass or a conscience. So that is certainly not something that should factor into whether or not a person is guilty or innocent of something like this, because it simply doesn't result in that kind of behavior.
I want to talk about some of the behavior that occurred after the fact, after the crime was committed. And I think there's some nuggets here that are before that also kind of tie in when we try to examine the mind of Koberger. Way back, right after the crimes were committed, before they had Koberger in custody, before we knew the name Brian Koberger, there was Papa Rogers. Remember Papa Rogers online, the guy that would comment on the case on various Facebook groups and such, that seemed to have inside knowledge, knew about the knife sheath, knew about other elements that were not public knowledge as of that point. The profile picture looked a lot like Brian Koberger, if you're to do like an artistic rendition of him. And then when he was arrested, those messages stopped. It was interesting. It seemed like someone was taunting, and maybe it was him. We don't know the full answer to that question yet. And then also immediately after the crime, we have learned that he took that picture in the shower of him standing there, that selfie, wearing that tight buttoned up white shirt. And it's just a bizarre picture. You look at it and go, why? Is this a taunt? And is that all it is? I want to get your insights on this, considering the Papa Rogers part that existed that we are aware of and the correlations with the picture. Because I found a few when I was on vacation the other week. I really wasn't that much on vacation because I was sitting there on my phone all day working on stuff. This is the shower picture. He's sitting there with a thumbs up. You can't see it because it's cropped. And next to it is images from the movie American Psycho.
Wow.
And, you know, same button up. That's more of a, you know, like a smock or something, but very similar look, all cleaned up. You know, and obviously he's holding an axe. It was a knife that was used, but very similar type looks. So that's the movie American Psycho. You also have, of course, the movie Psycho. And we all know the main scene in that is a shower. And Norman Bates wasn't a character that was necessarily understood. And people were always thinking him as a bit awkward. We have Koberger, who also felt very similar ways from his own writings. Mm-hmm. Two movies that seem to have a lot of correlation to that shower picture and also use the word psycho in their mm-hmm. titles. Mm-hmm. And my conjecture on it would be, you know, he feels that everyone thinks he's a psycho. He's probably been called that because of his weird ways of living or just the effects of having autism, and you just operate differently. But then outside the neurotypical, you may not understand it, and you get made fun of or picked on or what have you. He clearly did have a history of that happening as well. Is that shower picture a big F you to everybody going, you all think I'm psycho? I'm going to like put this out there right in front of you with a big thumbs up after I murder people, referencing these damn movies that no one's ever going to think that no one's going to catch this. And I got away with it. I'm really wondering, because again, he's innocent until proven guilty, but how does this strike you?
It's absolutely fascinating. And, you know, I had stayed away from the movie American Psycho back when it came out. I was younger and I just thought it would freak me out. I didn't watch it. You've got me curious.
Yeah. I haven't watched it in years. I didn't remember most of it. I'm going to watch it now.
I'm going to rewatch, you know, just because that is really eerie. And looking at those images that you've got there. It's pretty spine chilling. So the picture of him with the thumbs up, I found incredibly creepy because it definitely looks like he's proud of himself. He's accomplished something. And what an odd thing to take in the shower. It looks like his hair is still wet. Mm-hmm. And there's definitely meaning there. And, you know, considering what we know about this whole situation now, it's a pretty dark meaning.
Yeah. My reaction is that I made this. It's like, oh, my God, Koberger's shower picture is a taunting reference to American Psycho. And then I was like, oh, Psycho, too. Same. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a big screw you. How often do we see, and you've written a great book on this and the minds of what's the full title? I know.
Minds of Mass Killers, Understanding and Interrupting the Pathway to Violence.
Yes. You'll forgive me if I don't remember it all.
That's okay. It's a long one.
But yes, when we're talking about that, how often do we see mass killers basically emulate something because they don't feel, because they're missing that empathy. So they have to mimic something else or someone else. Sometimes it's a real killer. Sometimes like references with him have been to BTK. He studied under Catherine Ramsland, who wrote the book on BTK. How often do they find character or characters that they think they can relate to and almost idolize to an extent where then they're going to go out and give nods like this to them?
Yeah, my sense is that it's nearly always these guys, they're from early in life, they have been thinking about murder. They've been thinking about ways to kill people, ways to torture people. And usually this is reflected in their choice of entertainment, in the movies that they watch. Often they watch certain kinds of horror films over and over and over again. They begin to identify with the perpetrators, you know, the killers. Most of us, when we watch scary movies, we identify with the victims, right?
Sure.
We're scared. We want the bad guy to get caught. They identify with the perpetrators. Mm-hmm. And whether it's the mass shooters who study each other online and try to outtop each other's kill scores, guys that become serial killers often become fascinated with other serial killers.
That's what makes me wonder about these images. Oh, by the way, also knives, too. Mm-hmm. I think axe, actually, in An American Psycho. But the knives in the movie Psycho wasn't a gun or anything used there. It's so bizarre, but it kind of makes sense at the same time that would be what could be going on here. Knowing this, they're just seeing this right now, what else would you be looking for if you were to be going through Koberger's stuff to go, is there anything else here that can kind of tie him to this that maybe we didn't look at yet because maybe we didn't realize there was this nod to this type of a character? What other things should be examined?
Well, the big tell would be where he went on the internet. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what information they were able to glean about that, but that was the first thing that popped into my head when he was arrested was where does this guy hang out online? Mm-hmm. Because that's incredibly relevant. What kind of porn is he into? What kind of women is he interested in watching or looking at? I think all of that would have a lot of importance in a case like this.
I would now, seeing that, I'd be wondering about like Netflix history or any streaming platform history. Yeah. What is he watching? What is he watching on a regular basis? Do people like this, let's say that I'm right and that there is some sort of connection here with this. Do people like this like obsessively rewatch these sort of things over and over typically? Or it's not just I watched it once and now I idolize this guy. It's more of I'm wondering if like things like this feed people like that because they don't have much feeling and then they get something out of the movie from the bad guy perspective.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very much. They will have their favorite films, watch them over and over and over and over. And even with just an interesting one that we wouldn't have expected about the film Bowling for Columbine, mm-hmm. which was an anti-gun movie put out by Michael Moore. And a lot of kids that subsequently went on to become mass killers had been fascinated with that film as youngsters and grew up. And it was one of their favorite films. And they watched it over and over and over again, even though most of us would watch it and say, well, that was really an anti-violence movie.
Yeah.
But they liked the scenes of the killers in the movie and became fascinated with that and therefore watched it repeatedly.
Why? I mean, what is that? That makes a mind watch scenes like that and then sympathize or empathize or get joy from the, I mean, is it like porn to them? Like, I guess or seeing a member of the sex you're attracted to, you know, in some sort of way, is it that sort of a stimulation that they get out of it? Yeah. Is it a sexual stimulation or is it something else that's just like, that strong, but there.
I think you nailed it. It's that sense of arousal, and mm-hmm. whether or not it's actually sexual to them, I can't say. It may be in some cases, but it certainly is exciting and it makes them feel good. And that's that component of psychopathy that most of us, fortunately, do not have that. Mm-hmm. So we will watch horrible things in the media and have this revulsion or this sense of, oh, that's terrible or that's so sad, something negative. But people that are psychopathic will watch it and go, isn't this cool? Isn't this exciting? So very different response.
The fact, I mean, obviously so many things are very digital now. So that's why I said, look at the history of what he's watching.
Yeah.
But what about physical objects? I would wonder with something like this, if this is something you are that passionate about, people will still collect physical things for things they're really into. So I'm wondering, was there a copy of American Psycho or Psycho in his house? Was there the book American Psycho in his house? Was there anything relating to these characters in his possession? Obviously, they've raided it. I'm really wondering what they went through. Would you be surprised if they found something with it? And what sort of things do people like that collect? I know there's trophies that people get or that they have after their killings. I'm wondering if that picture itself is the trophy. And is with a nod to everything that inspired. But what would you be looking for in like physical objects or things like that around his house as far as markings or anything like that? What would they, what have you seen?
I would be looking for any other types of weaponry. A lot of times people will have photographs or save articles or stories about different kinds of knives or guns or different kinds of weapons, even historical books about different kinds of war crimes or criminals or Nazis or, you know, strange things that would just be out of place in most of our bookshelves or our homes.
Let's move away from the picture for a moment, but let's talk about some of the things that he was doing with his studies. Obviously, we've seen some of the questions that he had for the DeSales research that he was doing. Very specific questions about emotions, very specific about how did you feel when you committed the crime. What was weird to me about it was the question seemed over the top, as if he were asking them as someone who committed murder, not necessarily someone who is like shoplifting or something of that nature. I don't have the list in front of me right now, but they were very much along those lines. But if you're studying criminology, it could make sense that you're going to be researching all that in the context of who we think he might be or is alleged to be. It makes more sense. And there's also now the essay that was out there. We've seen some excerpts from it, basically an essay on how to process a stabbing crime scene. Is it just part of the studies, or do folks like this really go to this level of obsession and researching what they want to do, especially if it's their first time doing it?
Yeah, that's the thing that's so interesting in hindsight, is looking back at his academic life and being able to speculate about how much of this was really meeting his fantasy needs at the time and how much he was actually studying how to be a better criminal and get away with these things. Really feeling, as it looked like in that photograph, that he was quite proud of himself when he thought he had gotten away with it.
Yeah, very much so. Some are looking at it as a smoking gun. I don't know if it is or not. A jury will ultimately decide that. But we have the knife sheath, the knife, the sharpener, all bought by him on Amazon, at least the same model. But it was done about 6 months before the murders actually took place. There's also the ski mask that one of the witnesses, the surviving roommates, says that they saw him in with the bushy eyebrows. Shows he bought one of those too. Happens to look like the same one she described as seeing way back. The fact that they were purchased so far in advance, we're talking like 6 months to a year on some of these things. What does that say about this? I guess sometimes when you think of a case or stories like this, they buy those things right before, at least we think they buy them right before. Is that incorrect? Do people start really planning this out and getting their supplies that far out?
It's certainly likely that he would have bought it quite a bit before he was actually ready to use it, assuming that he was planning, plotting, rehearsing. And it's a scary thought, but what just occurred to me as you mentioned that is we don't know how many times he was driving around with these things in his car, perhaps looking at other people in other places, and he just never got the exact right opportunity.
Would that mean, though, that this was somewhat random and he was just going to run into any house that had people in just to kill? Or do you think we're going to find a lot more premeditation? Because we do have more data now that shows just how often he was circling that house. And it's a lot, even that night. And we're finding more camera information out, too, of where he was seen, and or the vehicle, at least what appears to be the vehicle that was seen. So are you saying that there's someone like this would likely have the tools with them when they're stalking, even if they're not going to go commit the crime at that moment? Part of having like the get up is an important part to them?
Certainly could be. And, you know, when his defense liked to make the point that he just was this harmless guy who liked to go out at night and drive around. Well, that sounds like stalking behavior to me. It's what a predator does. They go out. A lot of them are voyeuristic. So they're watching. They're looking for windows they can peep in. They're looking for women they can see out, maybe walking home from a bar and follow them home. And they do look for just the right opportunity, but they may pick a certain person and then watch them over the course of time before they actually, you know, plot the attack. But could he have been doing that for months? Yeah, I don't think I would be trying to make the case, well, he's just such a nice guy out driving around at night all the time.
Well, and the looking at the stars went up in flames when they realized, right. Oh, it was extremely foggy that night, like low fog, low clouds, like there was no stars. There's nothing there. I'm sure it'll be argued as conjecture of, well, it's he likes to. Maybe he's hoping to get out of the fog and find something. He was also allegedly seen in Clarkson, Washington, on video at stores hours after the murders. Some of the assumptions there is that maybe he was trying to get rid of some of the murder weaponry, or I'm wondering if it was more a victory lap in public with the tight white shirt on that we're seeing in the photo, just going out and about, maybe also disposing things. But I'm also wondering, is there a thrill that someone like that would get from going out looking all neat and white and clean after just committing such a horrible crime? People are freaking out and you're out there in the crowds. I mean, Costco, Albertsons, those are fairly busy places. And if he's seen there wandering around right after the murders, the morning of, getting all dressed up in the shower, is that something? Is that something of a thrill that they're just taking up every single moment that they can get and just soaking it all in?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, look what I can do. Look what I can get away with. And nobody knows. I've got this big secret and I fooled everybody.
Do you think something like this could be brought up in trial? Obviously, it's a lot of assumptions here. They'd have to probably find something within the house, or if there is a pattern of watching these movies or something, then I could imagine these sort of things being brought in. Without it, do you think something like that could be brought in, or what would be the vehicle to bring in some of these things, if at all?
Yeah, I think it would probably be pretty hard to have something that you could present as evidence without the person coming out and owning it and being willing to discuss it.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be very fascinating because this thing, it gets deeper and it gets darker every single day. When you see someone who's academically immersed in violent behavior, allegedly writing about how not to leave a trace at a murder scene, it's that fine line, especially this was done in 2020, to tell the difference between curious student and psychologically dangerous individual. At 2020, when he wrote this, not today, now that we have all the other context, at 2020, when he wrote this, is this the writings of a dangerous individual then?
You know, we can't read too much into that assignment because it's probably an assignment that everyone in that class did, and everyone that got a good grade pretty much wrote the same stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, going over the paper, it was well done. It was, as you say, clinical. It was factual. And that's exactly what the instructor would have expected, because you want people who work in law enforcement to understand this stuff, to understand how to preserve a crime scene. So I don't think from that one assignment we can read anything significant into it other than he did a good job. You know, he mm-hmm. studied, he was a smart guy. But would this have anything to do with his later behavior? Not in and of itself, but we do know that there's a small percentage of people who are drawn to forensics and criminology and police work because they have this psychopathic streak, this need sometimes to have power over other people, or because they really want to commit violent crimes and they feel like this gives them the opportunity to become a better criminal. So when we put it all in mm-hmm. the big picture, I can see why it's alarming to people.
And that's the interesting thing, because it seems like sometimes it can be a fine line there between you're using your skills, I'll call it that, for good or evil. I guess a skill, I would say it something of this nature, maybe empathetically kind of empty, something where you can more scientifically look at the material, more mechanically look at the material and keep emotion out of it. which would be helpful if you're a murderer. It would also be helpful if you're an investigator as well, to be able to really dig down and do that sort of thing. And the red flag here, I guess, or the fine line is, you know, if it's Koberger, when did he cross that? And was this a line that he'd already crossed back then, starting to think about these fantasies of maybe not have the exact people down of who he's going to go after, but having that rage, if it was him, that, okay, I'm going to really study about this mechanically. So the rage is over here, but I know how to execute this. And he certainly, you know, he talked about everything you need to do to not get caught. Mm-hmm. If it was him, he didn't leave a whole lot behind.
Yeah, he did a fairly good job, other than the knife sheath.
Other than the obvious, yes.
Without that, there would be nothing on him. So it's interesting, that emotional disconnect. It's the same in a lot of professions. I think even when you look at doctors or surgeons, you know, when somebody's doing a hip replacement on grandma, they're looking at the technical aspects of it and aligning the bones and the muscles and doing their best job. They're not thinking about, oh, and this is someone's grandma. You know, they're disconnected from the emotion. So I think, looking at where he was at developmentally, he would have been pondering a violent crime against women probably for many years, probably going at least into early to mid adolescence. So when we look at, was this something, a path he was already on cognitively? Yeah. Before, and that could have, as I said, could have driven him to want to study criminology.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you about that. If he was on this path, you know, obviously we're just talking, it's conjecture, it's allegations, he's innocent until proven guilty. But if we're talking that he was likely on this path from an adolescence, of course, we have the writings where he talks about not being able to feel emotion and things of that nature on a message board, if that's him. And then you have this character that seems to be playing out exactly that, from the recollections that people have talked about him in terms of his demeanor, his character. He's very much a guy that has some issues with women and a very hard time trying to naturally relate to, I think, not only women, but people in general. When you add that into the equation here, and then you take a look back at how early this could have been going on, does that make him an incel? I know that's a term that gets thrown out a lot, and there's a lot of argument of it. You can only be an incel if you're part of the group, if you're part of this online organized community. Yeah. Maybe by definition, but I don't know that the fruit is all that different from the one that's, you know, part of the orchard from the lone tree over here that has these same feelings.
Right.
What's your
exactly.
thoughts?
Yeah, incel isn't a clinical term at all. It's a kind of a pop culture term, and it's fine. I'm not knocking it, but I wouldn't specifically say, oh, I'm diagnosing him as an incel.
Sure.
I think we can say that any male who has violent fantasies toward women, who has had repeated romantic, you know, attempts and failed at all of them, and is often a virgin, that can be qualified as an incel, particularly if they're having violent fantasies, you know, but that's just a pop culture reference. To me, clinically, it doesn't carry a lot of meaning, but would he fit that? Yeah, sure. We could certainly say that.
Because that term comes up so much, and it's not a clinical term. How does one describe someone like this clinically? Obviously, we're going into probably a dark triad of personalities.
Yeah.
But I mean, how, if that is a strong one, the kind of deep hatred for women, the self-loathing, you know, ultimately extreme insecurity that leads to this defense mechanism of hate towards them. What is that? What are we looking at for somebody psychologically? And, you know, labels are one thing, but what kind of label are we putting on that, you know?
Yeah, label I have gone with from the beginning, and it would fit for anybody who commits a crime like this, is severe cluster B personality pathology. And you mentioned dark triad, and that's narcissism, psychopathy, and you add Machiavellianism, you know, that manipulative tendency. And then for a person who commits a crime like this, you throw in sadism. So it's really the dark tetrad. It's four personality qualities. And that would be the clinical term for someone like this.
You know, at the end of the day, when people overextend themselves or are overly confident, a lot of times we look at that, and if they're somewhat emotionally detached, and one will go, oh, they're really insecure inside, and this is, you know, how they're acting out. When you get to this level, if in fact it is him, and if he does have these sort of things, again, big ifs, kind of, is that someone who is really insecure today, or is that someone who was really insecure a long time ago, and now that insecurity is gone because they've built up this whole new person that wasn't ever who they were, and they operate in these areas, and the insecurity is not there anymore. It's just strictly confidence and hate, basically.
I think you described that brilliantly. You get your PhD on that one. Yes, that the initial genesis of the problems mm-hmm. could have come from a sense of rejection and insecurity, but it evolved over time into someone who's so defended, and this rage is really the predominant thing. And as you say, his narcissism and confidence. Mm-hmm. And the other personality quality that I didn't mention that I should throw in is a person who's kind of schizoid. And that means somebody who is disconnected from emotions and disconnected from other people and has trouble, you know, making empathic attunement with others. And that would certainly be another component with the other ones that could make a person very dangerous.
And so many times people look at what happened in your childhood. What abuse did you have? And as far as we know, and I'm not saying it couldn't be out there, but as far as we're aware, there really wasn't much abuse or anything there as far as the surface goes. So it doesn't always take something super tragic, I guess, to turn the person into this. Is this one of those things where it's just, this is how you are. This is how your chemical makeup is firing and where you're, where everything is in your body. And it just happens to make you be like this.
Yeah, I think we can say for folks like this, it's largely biological. Yeah. And why they come out of the chute wired wrong, we don't completely have that nailed down. We don't know, but we certainly know that not every serial killer, not every misogynist, not every horrible person has had a history of trauma. Some have, but that's true for the general population. Mm-hmm. You know, many people have a trauma history and don't become cluster B personality disorders who act out violently against other people. So there are just a lot of mysteries still about why some people seem to be wired differently this way.
What do you think's going on with him right now? When we see him coming out into court in a suit, dressed nicely in the days that he does, he seems to exude some sort of confidence here.
He sure does.
He doesn't seem to be real fidgety or weird. Weird, I guess, if we're looking at something, you know, the clinical term weird, we're looking at somebody who, if they did do this, showing zero empathy whatsoever. Where do you think he is in his mind on all of this, in this specific case, knowing what we know about him with his studies, his interests? And if we're to put all that together, he's sitting in that courtroom being charged with this, and everybody's saying, you killed these four kids. Mm-hmm. And let's just say he did. Mm-hmm. What is moving around in those wheels as they're turning?
Yeah, he sure doesn't look nervous, does he? He looks very confident and polished, and he's gotten a good haircut and a nice suit, and he looks put together. So it's really hard to speculate, but mm-hmm. there could certainly be a part of him that's enjoying the attention and enjoying the game aspect of it. And he has very aggressive legal representation, and he may really be thinking he's going to beat this.
Do you think there's a confidence that he's going to beat it, or is it just, I enjoy this ride? I mean, have we seen that before? Has there been other cases where the murderer got into it just to experience the whole, you know, the whole presentation, the whole, you know, everything that comes along with it, including the courtroom process?
I think there's an element of that. There's always this, look what I can do, look what I got away with, and I'm going to fool you all. Mm-hmm. And there can be that aspect of, it's sort of gamified for them. It's the attention.
It's creepy. It's all very, very creepy. But I'm glad we got a chance to kind of break down that essay. I did a full reading of it the other day on the air. And yeah, I mean, by itself, I walked away going, yeah, it seems like what a criminology student would write.
Yeah.
But then you get the context here and go, maybe there's more. Maybe it was a learning experience for him that he then applied a couple more years down the road.
Yeah, I had to do in my training, I had to do a lot of interviews with mm-hmm. sex offenders and research what goes on in the mind of a sex offender.
Yeah.
And that is very dark stuff. But if I wrote, which I don't remember, did I write any papers on that? But somebody could look at that and go, whoa, why is she interested in this? That's part of the training. You have to study it.
And it seems like with him, there's a lot of things that were done early. Like way before the crimes were actually committed, if he committed the crimes, buying the knife, like 6 months out, buying the head covering that he had, like about a year out. And I don't know that that speaks to that he was planning the crime at that moment in time. I just wonder if he went along with the crime with things that he had out of convenience. Just like, why would I go buy another knife? Why would I go buy this when I already have this? Mm-hmm. And that's what I wonder there. Do you think he was thinking that far ahead when he made those purchases? Or was it just, I'm buying this stuff, maybe I'll have a use for it someday?
My guess is it was part of the murder kit, the murder mm-hmm. plan. And people typically find the pre-murder phase, which can go on for years, mm-hmm. right? When they're entertaining their violent fantasies, they find that really exciting and arousing. And so the act of accumulating these items and the anticipation for what you plan to do with them someday, that's sort of like an adrenaline rush for them.
It's like a real sick, dark way of it's the journey, not the destination.
100%. Yeah.
He stood in front of the shower, freshly groomed, wearing a crisp, tightly buttoned up shirt. Anybody ever see anybody wearing shirts this tight anymore, ever? I suppose if you're wearing the tie, you'd probably button it up there, but there's no tie. It's just awkward. Brian Koberger flashing the thumbs up with his little smirk. It was 10:31 a.m. on November 13th of 2022, and that date is very noticeable for this conversation, and notable, not just noticeable, but notable, because just hours earlier, the University of Idaho, four students, they've been murdered in their off-campus home. No one knew who Brian Koberger was at that moment in time or suspected him at that moment in time. But here he was taking a selfie that very morning. Someone had nothing to do with this. Okay, sometimes people take selfies. A lot of times people take selfies. Brian Koberger doesn't strike me as a selfie kind of guy. I could be completely off on that assumption. At first glance, the photo might seem like nothing more than an awkward mirror shot. The kind we've all seen 1,000 times on Instagram. But context changes everything. The shirt, the smirk, the setting. It all struck a chord. What is this? Is this a taunt? Is this evidence? Is there something on his finger there that shows friction from a knife? When I saw it, a lot of things ran through my mind. And a few days after seeing the photo, another photo struck my interest, and a concept struck my interest. Take a look at this one. That's American Psycho, in the movie American Psycho. Notice any similarities here? Tight, button-up, white. It's not exactly the same type of shirt by any means. But one of the biggest cruxes of this case is, how did someone kill these four kids and not have any blood on them? Or what did they do to avoid all of that? Keep in mind, he wrote a paper not that far prior to these murders, about how to commit murders pretty much like this and clean up, not get caught, and evade detection. He was studying criminology, so you got to give him that. That's not that crazy if you're studying that, really. That's Patrick Bateman from American Psycho. But there's a lot more to the similarities that I feel this picture brings out, and we're going to go through some of them. If you're just joining us, be sure to press subscribe, whatever platform you're listening to us on, if it's on podcasts. And if you are watching this on YouTube, please hit that subscribe button as well and the bell so you don't miss any of our updates as we keep covering this case. And leave your comments. We do love to hear your feedback on all these thoughts that we bring up here on the program. So eerie similarities here between Koberger and our first thought there, or my first thought there, was American Psycho. Others saw Norman Bates from Psycho itself. You got a bathroom setting. There was the main killer killing someone in Psycho in the bathroom. And Norman Bates was kind of a weird character. Kind of out there, kind of off by himself, kind of awkward. One may see some striking similarities in the personality there with Brian Koberger. The timing of the photo combined with the sterile, composed appearance made everybody ask, was this just a photo or is this a message? Is there something deeper going on here? We got to look at history. We have to look at character development, if you will, or arcs in people's character and life. And this piece, I know, we're talking a lot of speculation here, but I don't think it's that far out of bounds. We don't usually go very far out of bounds in terms of speculation, but this just really struck me. And let's walk it back a little bit to unpack what's all been discovered, because it goes way beyond the shower photo. In the chaotic weeks following the brutal killings in Moscow, Idaho, you had internet forums, social media groups, and amateur sleuth communities out there exploding with theories. One idea began to pick up steam in a way that made it feel more like a developing lead than a shot in the dark. The possibility that the killer had been inserting himself into online conversations about the crime. Not anonymously lurking, but actively commenting, theorizing, and possibly taunting. There were two names that quickly popped up in that atmosphere at that time. Papa Roger being one of them, and Inside Looking. This image, if you're watching us on YouTube, is the image of Papa Roger. That was his screenshot. His headshot, profile shot. It's Brian Koberger right next to him. Notice any similarities? And keep in mind, at the time, no one knew or suspected Brian Koberger. What a striking similarity to Brian Koberger, the very person who was arrested and charged with these crimes, posting about the crimes using a profile image that looks a lot like him, talking about things that no one else knew about the crime scene at that moment in time, unless you were an investigator. The Facebook account for Papa Roger was particularly active in groups focused on the Idaho murders. This wasn't just a random Facebook user dropping in. The posts were pointed, persistent, and oddly confident. One in particular gave a lot of people chills. It was posted before law enforcement released many details, and it mentioned a large fixed-blade knife and the possibility that the killer had left a sheath behind. Odd little detail to note. one that I think would probably be a bit of concern if you are the killer. Weeks later, after that comment was posted by Papa Roger, the man who looks strikingly like Brian Koberger in his profile picture, law enforcement confirmed the discovery of a K-bar-style knife sheath left behind and underneath one of the victim's bodies. That detail had been unknown to the public at the time the Papa Roger post was written. That one clue, a sheath, it took the conversation from speculation to suspicion. Redditors, Facebook users, and YouTube started archiving every post they could find from the Papa Roger account. People began noticing a pattern, not just in what was being said, but how it was being said. The tone was analytical, assertive, sometimes condescending. He challenged people in the group, pushing back as if he had an agenda or some kind of knowledge that others didn't. It wasn't trolling and it wasn't joking. It read more like someone deliberately guiding the narrative, needing to be in control of the ball that they started rolling down the hill. Or even worse, showing off. Hiding in plain sight, if you will, getting joy of being out there on these forums, talking with all of these people who are hurting, who are searching for answers. Again, in plain sight with the pictures. But no one knew who Brian Koberger was yet. And certainly nobody's thinking some military style general looking guy, as that photo resembles. But the similarities are beyond striking. That was one thing that people began wondering about. Is it him? And to this day, we still don't know the answer to that. There was also inside looking. The Reddit account showed up in the Moscow murder subreddit and started posting elaborate theories that read more like guided walkthroughs. It outlined how the killer could have parked behind the house, entering through the sliding glass door, moved room to room, and exited, all while avoiding detection. The account even speculated about the killer's emotional state. Remember Brian Koberger did that little DeSales University research project focused on the emotional state of criminals after they committed a horrible crime? Interesting that one would be obsessed with how one should feel, the killer should feel, while in a state of attack, a state of murder, and after the crime. One comment in response to a thread asking what the killer was doing in the weeks after the crime simply said, "Rush of adrenaline, very excited." That content drew a now famous reply. "Dude is solving his own crime. ... Psycho." The accuracy, the tone, and the odd specificity of both accounts raised eyebrows, especially after Brian Koberger's arrest in late December. Koberger was a PhD student in criminology at Washington State University, just across the state line from where the murders took place. Suddenly became the center of attention, and those social media accounts, they suddenly made a lot more sense. Not only did the timelines align with what this person was talking about, but so did the voice. The posts were methodical, clinical, even. They sounded like someone who studied criminal behavior, not just academically, but with a personal interest. Some compared it to writing a case study on a crime you were involved in, which, ironically, isn't that far off from the concept of criminal narcissism. And then, almost in perfect sync with his arrest, the Papa Roger's Facebook account disappeared. Deleted. The timing couldn't have been more suspicious. One day before law enforcement took Koberger into custody, Inside Looking also went dark. To this day, law enforcement has not confirmed whether either of those accounts were operated by Koberger. There's been no official digital fingerprint release, but former FBI agents, including our own contributor Jennifer Coffendaffer, have said publicly on this show that the parallels are too close to ignore. She noted that Koberger had already demonstrated questionable judgment, driving his own car to the crime scene, keeping his phone with him for the parts of the night, and then allegedly leaving the knife sheath behind. If he made those kinds of mistakes, why wouldn't he make another? By logging onto social media to poke the bear. Let everybody know just how smart you are. Smarter than the room. Which brings me back to the haunting bathroom selfie, which you can now see here on the screen, along with all of those photos put together. It's a creepy, creepy image if you're watching us on YouTube. If you're not, you want to go check us out and you're listening on the audio version of the podcast, just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi and you can see this image. It has the Koberger in the shower. It has the American Psycho character right behind it. It has Norman Bates next to it and has Papa Roger right below. Koberger's picture, that selfie, sure fits right in with these, doesn't it? You couldn't have asked someone to take a selfie that looked more like a piece from a murder mystery movie than this. All vampiric looking and just creepy. Some may say psycho. If it's him. All allegations, all speculations. This man is innocent until proven guilty. We have to look at the evidence. We have to look at the correlations. And we have to look at this guy who, if Papa Roger is him, and I don't know how it could not be, was getting a bit of a thrill at being smarter than the rest of the room before he got caught. Being right out there in the center of everything, talking about the case, even when someone on one of the forums brought up, okay, the white Hyundai Elantra, as that information came to light and the public started searching for that vehicle. He didn't engage in that one. He didn't tell anyone, well, yes, it must have been that because it's on camera. No, that raised a red flag to him, and he even called it, that's a red herring. Get off this path. I own one of those. And then right after, he changed his license plates. After the arrest, investigators found the photo on Koberger's phone. It was timestamped 10:31 a.m. on November 13th, just hours after the murders occurred. Shows him clean, calm, and almost smug. He's in the bathroom, giving a casual thumbs up. His shirt is buttoned up all the way. Clean and pressed. His hair is in place. There's no blood. No bruises. No signs of struggle. Just an oddly serene man standing in front of a shower. It was a setting and expression that unsettled people the most. Taken so soon after the murders, while the victims lay undiscovered, it looked like a twisted victory lap. The white shirt, the tidy hair, the vacant calm immediately sparked comparisons to other characters. Patrick Bateman in American Psycho, the fictional serial killer who maintained an immaculate appearance and a detached demeanor even as he committed brutal acts. Bateman, like Koberger, was obsessed with control, with being perceived as a smarter, sharper, cleaner than everyone else. The photo, whether intentionally styled that way or not, hits eerily close to that archetype. Of course, then there is the shower, the striking backdrop in Psycho. The shower scene is one of the most iconic in horror history, a place of vulnerability. Turned violent, people couldn't help but notice the dark symbolism of Koberger's standing there, clean, composed. A scene of real life horror played out just hours earlier down the road. Maybe it was all a coincidence. Maybe he just liked how he looked that morning. The combination of the timing, the setting, and expression made it very hard to see it as anything but calculated, or at the least, disturbingly detached. Koberger, from what we understand from his own writings that have been dug up online, was someone who did feel detached, felt a lack of emotion, lack of empathy, a lack of feeling in general. He called this out in himself when he was in his teen years, allegedly on a message board post that was discovered shortly after he was arrested. And those who got to know him described him as being very similar to what he was describing himself as a mid-teen. Someone who just didn't seem to mesh with society, didn't have social skills, always seemed like he was smarter than the room, condescending, controlling. And if questioned, you don't question a character like that. Because they will be right, and they will move around whatever they need to move to fit the narrative that they want to fit. But the fact that this looks like it was modeled after two movies, with the name Psycho prominently being part of the title, American Psycho and Psycho. What it looks like to me, what my conjecture is on this, is that he was fed up with being what he viewed treated differently. Didn't view that his own actions or his own way of acting around others may have something to do with it. No. That's everybody else's fault. Those people that call me psycho, screw them. That's just my conjecture of how one may think when you're feeling that way. I'll show them. And he did. He showed them all right, thinking he was smarter than everyone else in the room, if it was him. Taking a photo like that, putting it out there. Right here, guys. Never going to figure it out. Soon it was learned he wasn't the smartest in the room because more fuel was added to the fire when it was revealed that Koberger's phone had pinged near the crime scene at 9:12 a.m. Again, just hours after the murders. Prosecutors believe he drove back to the house, possibly to see the aftermath. Maybe he was curious. Maybe he was watching. Former FBI agents say it's not uncommon for certain types of offenders to return to the scene, to relive the event, to see the chaos that they have created. It's about control. It's about dominance. It's a voyeuristic thrill. And you line that up with the selfie taken the hour later, the narrative starts to take shape. It is not just a photo. It might be a timestamp of satisfaction. Meanwhile, Koberger went back to business as usual. He attended classes. He continued his role as a teaching assistant. He graded papers, and according to several students, his demeanor even changed. He seemed more relaxed and more talkative and very disheveled that first day back in class. Before the murders, he'd failed an entire class on an exam. Afterward, he started giving everyone perfect scores. It was as if something had shifted, not in a normal way, but in a very bizarre, manic and quiet, confident way. As if whatever pressure had existed before had then been released. At the time that all that was going on, he was allegedly also taking precautions. He drove cross-country with his father for the holidays, heading back to Pennsylvania. Once there, surveillance caught him wearing gloves while taking out the trash. He even tried to dispose of garbage in his neighbor's bins, you know, like you do at 4 a.m. when you're visiting your parents on the opposite side of the country. Investigators say he meticulously cleaned his car, the same one believed to be seen near the crime scene, and even changed the license plates days after the killings. The defense has, of course, pushed back as they have on everything, saying those behaviors can be explained. Hygiene habits, nervous energy. No, it doesn't. You can't just say that and expect everyone to go, oh, yeah, yeah, nervous energy, putting random things in plastic bags and then going and putting them in your neighbor's garbage can. And yeah, no. Prosecutors argue that taken together, they paint a clear picture. Someone who knew he had something to hide. And there's the psychological side. Experts across the board, former FBI agents, forensic psychologists, criminologists have described Koberger as someone who may exhibit traits of narcissism and psychopathy. Again, not diagnosed, just observations. That doesn't mean, like I said, he's been diagnosed, but his behavior fits a pattern. Cold, methodical, lacking remorse, focused on control. Even the way he allegedly treated students in his class points to someone who relished power dynamics. And if he did post online as Papa Roger or inside looking, that lines up perfectly with the idea of someone who wants to be the smartest guy in the room, someone who gets a thrill from being involved in the chaos without anyone realizing. Someone who couldn't resist showing off, even if it meant taking a risk. It's not the behavior of a criminal mastermind. It's the behavior of someone who wanted to be seen as one. Someone who thought he was smarter than everyone else, smarter than law enforcement, smarter than the public, maybe even smarter than the justice system itself. Maybe he wanted to experience the justice system itself. We don't know for certain what his intentions are. We probably never will. If it's him. We don't know for certain if he posted online or if that selfie was a taunt. What we do know is that there is a trail of behavior, both digital and physical, that has unsettled even the most seasoned investigators. Koberger, of course, has pled not guilty by remaining silent when asked to enter a plea. He's entitled to a fair trial, and the burden of proof lies with the state. Regardless of what happens in court, these details paint a disturbing portrait of what might have been going on behind the scenes. Because if it turns out that he took the selfie as a souvenir, that he wrote those posts as a way to insert himself into the narrative, and he circled back to the crime scene just to watch it all unfold, and that the picture in the shower and the outfit were an homage to American Psycho and Psycho. We're dealing with someone that committed far more than a brutal act. We're dealing with someone who wanted to be recognized for it. And that's the most chilling part. Not just the violence, not just the loss, but the idea that someone might have killed and then smiled for the camera, confident that nobody would ever connect the dots. Well, they did. What do you think about all of this? Let me know in the comments. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Is this all just, you know, bias that we have, confirmation bias that we have from being into this case for too long, when we see something and kind of go down a road because it looks like it might fit? Maybe. Or do all of these dots, American Psycho, Psycho, Papa Rogers, and Koberger, is there a connection? Does he want us to know there's a connection? Does he want us to know that he knows he's psycho, but you don't? At least at that time. Also of note, Ann Taylor, his attorney, has also filed motion that the word psycho should not be used during the trial, along with murderer and several others that, you know, point to the crime he's alleged of committing. We'll see how all that stands out, as the judge has not quite yet ruled on the terminology that can or cannot be used. Again, in the comments, let me know what you think. I would love to hear your feedback, and press subscribe, because we got a lot more coming for you as we continue to cover this case right here on the Hidden Killers podcast. from True Crime Today. I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for joining us.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
What if I told you that right now, millions of people are living with a debilitating condition that's so misunderstood, many of them don't even know that they have it? That condition is obsessive compulsive disorder, or OCD. I'm Dr. Patrick McGrath, the Chief Clinical Officer of NOCD. And in the 25 years I've been treating OCD, I've met so many people who were suffering from the condition in silence, unaware of just what it was. OCD can create overwhelming anxiety and fear around what you value most, make you question your identity, beliefs, and morals, and drive you to perform mentally and physically draining compulsions or rituals. Over my career, I've seen just how devastating OCD can be when it's left untreated. But help is available. That's where NOCD comes in. NOCD is the world's largest virtual therapy provider for obsessive compulsive disorder. Our licensed therapists are trained in exposure and response prevention therapy, a specialized treatment proven to be incredibly effective for OCD. So visit NOCD.com to schedule a free 15-minute call with our team. That's NOCD.com.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
Ryan Seacrest here. When you have a busy schedule, it's important to maximize your downtime. One of the best ways to do that is by going to ChumbaCasino.com. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino games like spin slots, bingo, and solitaire that you can play for free for a chance to redeem some serious prizes. So hop on to ChumbaCasino.com now and live the Chumba life. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
Ryan Seacrest here. When you have a busy schedule, it's important to maximize your downtime. One of the best ways to do that is by going to ChumbaCasino.com. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino games like spin slots, bingo, and solitaire that you can play for free for a chance to redeem some serious prizes. So hop on to ChumbaCasino.com now and live the Chumba life. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
Ryan Seacrest here. When you have a busy schedule, it's important to maximize your downtime. One of the best ways to do that is by going to ChumbaCasino.com. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino games like spin slots, bingo, and solitaire that you can play for free for a chance to redeem some serious prizes. So hop on to ChumbaCasino.com now and live the Chumba life. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
What if one face serum could tackle blackheads, dullness, and fine lines? PowerTrip Exfoliating Facial Serum by Verify Skincare has proven it can. This biotech-powered formula combines gentle exfoliation with deep hydration to transform your skin. No dryness, no irritation. With clinically tested ingredients like lactic acid and phytospheric technology, it's all about real results. Upgrade your routine with PowerTrip by Verify Skincare. Visit VerifySkincare.com to start your order today. 100% money-back guarantee and free gifts with purchase. Verify Skincare. Clean. Simple. Powerful.